Jesus was the greatest teacher who has ever taught. Part of that is the way he taught, he had a way of saying things that you could never forget. For example, just imagine straining at a gnat and swallowing a camel. That's just one example. There are dozens. The other issue was, it's not just the way he taught, it's what he taught. Some of the greatest spiritual lessons ever uttered came from the lips of Jesus Christ. For example, he taught, trust me for the gift of eternal life. He taught us to love God with all that is within us and to love each other as he loved us. Come to think about it, he taught a lot of just great spiritual truths which made him a great spiritual teacher. What I'd like to do today is give you a sample of three of what I'm going to call his great lessons. And in some cases, these are not as well known as others, but I think they are great things that we need to learn. With that in mind, will you turn with me to Mark chapter 6, where I'm going to begin reading with verse 30. Mark chapter 6, verse 30. Then the apostles gathered to Jesus and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. And he said to them, come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while. For there are many coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. So they departed to a deserted place in a boat by themselves. But the multitude saw them departing, and many knew him, and ran there on foot from all the cities. They arrived before them and came together to him. And Jesus, when he came, saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion for them because they were like sheep not having a shepherd. So he began to teach them many things. When the day was now far spent, his disciples came to him and said, this is a deserted place, and already the hour is late. Send them away, that they may go into the surrounding country and villages and buy for themselves bread, for they have nothing to eat. But he answered and said to them, you give them something to eat. And they said to him, shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give them something to eat? And he said to them, how many loaves do you have? Go and see. And they found out, and they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then he commanded them to make them all sit in the ground on the green grass. So they sat down in ranks, in hundreds and fifties. And when he had taken the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven, blessed, and broke the loaves, and gave it to his disciples to set before them. And the 2 fish he divided among them all. So they all ate and were filled. And he took up 12 baskets full of fragments and of the fish. Now those who had eaten, the loaves were about 5,000 men. Now, if you will recall, prior to this passage, Jesus sent out the disciples. This was their first mission. This passage begins with telling us that they had come back. Verse 30 says, the apostles gathered to Jesus and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. Notice they are called apostles. Prior to this, they were called disciples. And as you've heard me say, the word disciple means teacher. The word apostle means sent one. Now they have learned and they have been sent. And so they regather to him and no doubt rehearsed all that had happened. This is one of those places in the Bible where I would love to have been a fly on the wall. I can only imagine all the excitement of the things that they had seen and the things that they had said. At any rate, the verse does not tell us all the details. It just tells us they had gathered to him and they rehearsed what had happened. His response to that is in verse 31. Come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest for a while. And the latter part of the verse explains why. For there were many coming and going, and they had not even had time to eat. So what is going on here is they've told him what they've done, and his response is, you've been too busy. And that was true. They'd been so busy in the ministry that they had not even had time to eat. Now, I have been there, done that, especially when I was a special speaker and traveling about the country, and I'd get so involved in talking to people that I missed a meal or two. Not that it hurt me, you understand, but just that I know what this is like. As a matter of fact, it was a common practice to not eat the meal before I spoke because all the food went to the stomach and so did the blood when it should have been in the brain. And so I learned I could speak better on an empty stomach. So I skipped many a meal in the name of the ministry. Well, that's what happened. And they were very, very busy on top of that. And Jesus said, and here's the lesson, take a break. You need a break today. And so he said to them, what I want you to do is go to a deserted place and let's just have a retreat. And the next verse tells us they departed to a deserted place in a boat by themselves. Now, we don't exactly know where they're going, but we have a good idea. And it is estimated that the trip was about 4 miles from where they were, which was no doubt Capernaum. But the point I want to make before we go on is this. The spiritual lesson here is very simple. Come apart. Take a break. You need a rest. Vance Havner said, if you do not come apart and rest, you will come apart. So you need to take a break. Now I want to explore this concept for just a minute. The first thing I would say is that notice that they worked and then they took a break. Some don't work, all they do is take a break. Spurgeon said, there is no fatigue so wearisome as that which comes from a lack of work. So to qualify for the break, you gotta work. The second thing I would say is, after your work, take a break. Some people take a break and they keep working. Matter of fact, I know of people, and I've done it myself, who went on vacation and they worked on their vacation. M.R. Dahan tells of going to a cottage by a lake for a vacation, and he spent some time fishing, but he also spent a lot of time writing Our Daily Bread devotional. So what Jesus is saying is, you've worked, now rest, no work, just rest, and come apart to do it. And if you don't, you may just come apart. After 6 months of intensive labor, Evan Roberts, who was the prime mover of the 1904 Wells Revival, withdrew from his ministry. He was emotionally and physically a broken man. He did not return to public ministry for 25 years. That was after 6 months of just being too busy. Now, I want to make a suggestion. And my suggestion is this, that if you learn to take a break, you might even do better work. I know that's true in my case. Sometimes I just get too tired to study, and I lose my creativity, it seems to me. So I just learn, take a break. And when I do, I come back refreshed and am more able to do a better job. According to tradition, the Apostle John's hobby was raising pigeons. One day, an elder was returning from hunting, and he passed John's house, and John was playing with one of his birds. The elder gently chided John for spending time frivolously. John looked at the critic's bow and remarked that the string was loose. The hunter explained, "I always loosen the string on my bow when it's not in use. If it always stays tight, it would lose its rebounding quality and fail me in the hunt." To which John replied, "I'm relaxing the bow of my mind so that I might be better able to shoot the arrows of divine truth." I say, you need a break so you can do a better job. But let me make another suggestion. You need to take a break to be Christ-like. I mean, isn't that what he did? Now, if the Son of God needs to come apart and rest, what does that say about us? You need a break today. An angry church member said to her pastor, "I phoned you Monday and could not get you." The pastor explained that Monday was his day off. And the woman responded, "What? A day off? The devil never takes a day off." "That's right," replied the pastor. "And if I didn't, I would be like him." Don't be like the devil. Be like the Lord. I mean, this is lesson one, right? You open the Bible and it said God created this and God created that. And what did he do? He rested. You want to be godly? You need rest. And in this passage, Jesus says, come apart. And so if you want to be Christ-like, you need to come apart. And not to do so is more like the devil than the Lord. So lesson one in this passage is take a break. It's possible to work too hard. There's a second lesson. Let's pick up in the passage at verse 33. But the multitude saw them departing, and many knew him and ran there on foot from all the cities, and they arrived before they came together to him. This is rather interesting. The disciples and the Lord got in a boat on the Sea of Galilee, and the crowd saw them leave, or at least some in the crowd. And the word spread, and they thought they knew where he was going, so they didn't get in boats. They ran there on land. Now, if the experts who study these things are right, the place where Jesus and the disciples went was about 4 miles by boat and about 10 miles by land. And yet the text says they got there before the boatload. If there were no wind blowing at the time, that's about right. At any rate, they arrive ahead and are waiting for when the boat crowd comes. When they got there, verse 34 says, and Jesus, when he saw he saw the great multitude, was moved with compassion because they were like sheep not having a shepherd. So he began to teach them. Now we have seen on many occasions, Jesus came to a spot and he saw people and he saw their physical need and he healed them. This time, I guess the sick folk didn't make the 10-mile hike. So he looks at these people and he sees not their physical need, but their spiritual need. And the text says that he saw them as sheep without a shepherd. What a vivid illustration of people's spiritual need. What are people like when they are sheep without a shepherd? Well, what do sheep need? Well, for one thing, they need nourishment. They need to be led to green pastures. The other thing is I'm told sheep are pretty dumb animals and they need some guidance. Boy, that's apropos. And one of the jobs of the shepherd was to protect the sheep. So someone has suggested, sheep without a shepherd cannot find their way. They need direction. Dante, in a line, said, I woke in the middle of the wood, and it was dark, and there was no clear way before me. Life can be like that for people. It can be bewildering. We stand at the crossroads, and we don't know which way to go. We need direction. We need guidance. Sheep without a shepherd cannot find pasture. They need food from which they get strength. We not only, as sheep without a shepherd, need direction, we need strength to get there. And what the Lord provides as our shepherd is He gives us the direction, He tells us the way to go, and gives us the strength to go that way. And finally, it's been suggested that sheep without a shepherd have no defense against the dangers that threaten them. It can defend itself neither from the robbers nor the wild beast. If life has taught us anything, one author said, it's that we cannot live alone. No man can defend himself from the temptations which assail him and from the evil of the world that attacks him. Only in the company of Jesus can we walk in the world and keep our garments unspotted from it. So Jesus looked at the crowd and He saw their spiritual need, their need for direction, their need for strength, and their need for protection. Then the text tells us that He was moved with compassion. Now let me ask you a question. Have you ever seen somebody that struck you as just a lost soul? And what do you do when that happens? What's your response? Well, Jesus' response was He had compassion. I, being in the ministry, have met many of these types. They just need somebody to take them by the hand and show them the way. They are just like lost sheep. There is a story about a cold evening in Northern Virginia that happened many, many years ago. An old man sat by the river waiting for a ride across. His beard was glazed with winter frost, and the wait seemed endless. His body became numb and stiff because of the frigid north wind. Then he heard the faint, steady rhythm of approaching hooves galloping along the frozen path. Anxiously, he watched several horsemen round the bend. He let the first one pass by without an effort to get his attention. Then another passed by, and another. Finally, the last rider neared the spot where the old man sat like a snow statue. As this one drew near, the old man caught the rider's eye and said, "Sir, would you mind giving an old man a ride to the other side? There doesn't appear to be a passageway by foot." Riding his horse to the man, he replied, "Sure thing, hop aboard." Seeing the old man was unable to lift his frozen body from the ground, the horseman dismounted and helped the old man onto the horse. The horseman took the old man not just across, but to his destination, which was a few miles away. As they neared the tiny but cozy cottage, the horseman curiously cautioned him to inquire, his curiosity cautioned him to inquire, "Sir, I noticed that you let several other riders pass by without making any effort to secure a ride. Then I came and you immediately asked me for a ride. I'm curious, why on such a bitter winter night would you wait and ask the last rider? What if I had refused and left you there?" The old man lowered his head slowly and looked up at the rider and straight into his eye and replied, "I've been around these parts for some time. I reckon I know people pretty good." I looked into the eyes of the other riders and immediately saw they had no concern for my situation. It would have been useless to talk to them for a ride. Then I looked into your eyes, and kindness and compassion were evident. I knew then and there that your gentle spirit would welcome an opportunity to give me assistance in my situation. Those heartwarming words touched the horseman deeply. He said to this old man, "I am grateful for what you have said. May I never get too busy on my own affairs that I fail to respond to the needs of others with kindness and compassion." And with that, Thomas Jefferson turned around and made his way to the White House. Jesus looked at the crowd, saw them as sheep without a shepherd, and was moved with compassion. Thomas Jefferson was arrested by one man who saw the compassion. Now my question is, when people look at us, do they see compassion or indifference? Jesus then, the text says, taught them. And I would like to suggest that this is the second great message in this passage. The first is, you should take a break. And the second is, you should teach lost sheep. That's what Jesus did. Now, I can just imagine what you're going to say. Oh, I'm not qualified to do that. I mean, I could never teach people spiritual things. That's the pastor of the job of the pastor. Well, let me suggest a couple of things. In the first place, believers know what lost sheep need to know. You know? I mean, you already know enough to help a whole lot of people in the world. As a matter of fact, in my experience, when people come to talk to me, most of what I tell them is common sense. I recognize some of you may not have any of that, but most of you do, and you can help people if you are moved with compassion. But let me also suggest that you know more than they know about spiritual things. In the book of Romans, the Apostle Paul said in chapter 15, "I myself am confident concerning you, my brethren, that you also are full of goodness, filled with all knowledge, able to admonish one another." Years ago, a man wrote a book, and he used a different translation than the one I just read, and he titled this book based on this verse. And the title of the book was Competent to Counsel. And I would submit to you that you are a competent counselor to lost sheep, if you are moved by compassion. So, the second great lesson we need to learn is we not only need to take a break, we need to minister to other people. We need to teach lost sheep. There is a third lesson in this passage. Let's pick up at verse 35. "Now, when the day was far spent, his disciples came to him and said, 'This is a deserted place and the hour's late.'" Can I read between the lines for a second? Does that mean he preached a long time? I just thought I'd throw that in. The text doesn't say that, but anyway. Moving right along, the point is, they came and said, "Look, these people need to eat. So," verse 36, "send them away that they may go to some surrounding county and village and buy themselves bread, for they have nothing to eat." Translated in modern lingo, the disciples said to the Lord, "Look, there's no McDonald's, Burger King, KFC, El Pollo Loco, Taco Bell, or Del Taco. Send them someplace where they got those kind of joints so they can eat." Now, here's Jesus' response to them. This is quite startling. He says to them, "You give them something to eat." Is he out of his mind? Why would he ever say something like that? Now, you got to think for a minute. Have they been with him for a while? Have they seen him do the supernatural? So, could he have supernaturally fed this crowd? Did they know that he knew that they couldn't? Should they not have learned by this point? When the Lord tells you to do something and you can't do it, what you do is trust him for the power to do it. Right? That's why the Bible tells us we live by faith. We trust the Lord for the grace and the power to do what he's told us to do. So what the Lord has done is test them. Have you figured it out yet? So he gives them a job. You feed them. And here's their response, verse 37. Shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give them something to eat? Now, this is a lot of money. Some estimates is that as much as a year's wage for the average laborer. In other words, they're saying, we're broke. Now, at the end of the passage, it tells us there were 500 men. This is a huge crowd. And they say, we don't have the resources to do this. What are they looking at? They're looking at themselves. So, he says to them, well, how many loaves do you have? Go see. In other words, go through the crowd and collect the bread we got. Some, no doubt, brought bread. And they found out, and they came back, and we said, we got 5 loaves. 5,000 people and 5 brought a loaf of bread. And they said, oh, and by the way, we found some bonus points. We got 2 fish to boot. And he says, all right, give it to me. Then he says, have all the people sit in groups. They sat in little groups of 150. That would make the distribution easy. Would also make the count accurate. At any rate, he then prays and starts handing out bread and fish. The miracle is between his hands and theirs. It just keeps coming. Until the text tells us that everybody was filled. He fed 5,000 people. Actually, there were more. With just 5 loaves and 2 fish. And then everybody was full. And there were 12 basketfuls left over. Now, many a preacher has pointed out that this was 1 basket for each apostle. So here's what's going on. I'm testing you and you didn't get it. So I'm going to give you a little basket so that you will remember next time. That you learn to trust me. So, by the way, notice they ended up with more than they started with. They started with 5 loaves and ended up with 12 baskets. Wow. The Lord always abundantly supplies. Now, I just want to point out that this story is repeated in all 4 Gospels. That's rare. This is one of the most important miracles in all of the Gospels. And all agree that it was designed to teach the apostles, just trust me. There are times when you just need to trust the Lord. And that is about every minute of every day. One author has suggested that the miracle was hidden from the crowd. They didn't see the miracles, only the apostles did. I think that has some merit. In other words, it was intended for the disciples alone, he says, who were the ones who brought the loaves and the fish to Jesus, and the ones who distributed the food to the crowd. And then he says this, If the crowd had been described as sheep without a shepherd, Jesus is presented as the shepherd who provides for all of the needs of the sheep, so that they lack nothing. I think that has great, great merit. The Lord did this for the disciples to teach them to trust Him. Now, what I've done is mentioned three great lessons. Lesson number one, did you forget that already? Take a break. I suspect of all the sermons I've ever preached and all the points I've ever made, that's the one you'll remember. I have the pastor's permission to take a break. No, you have Jesus' permission, and that's a whole lot more. What was the second thing we got out of this passage? Teach lost sheep. And the third is, trust the Lord. Now, let's reverse these. One of these things has to do with your relationship with the Lord. You need to learn to trust the Lord. And the second thing you need to do is learn to love people and minister to them. And that means teach them spiritual truth. And if you get so busy doing that, then you're qualified to take a break. So this involves our relationship to the Lord, our relationship to other people, and our relationship to ourselves. This covers it all, doesn't it? These are three of, I think, of the great spiritual lessons, and there are many, many more. So I want to close by just emphasizing a couple of things. First of all, I want to say, you need rest. Are you convinced? As a matter of fact, it gets down to this. Now, he wanted them to come apart and be in a deserted place for a while. But I think you need rest even on a daily, maybe I should say nightly, basis. You know, I have, as a general rule, try to go to bed early, and I get up early. But every once in a while, I get sloppy. And I don't go to bed as early. I stay up. If it's too late, my wife and I like to watch the monologue. You know, Jay, not David. He's our favorite. At any rate, then it just, I wake up and I'm not as refreshed. And I always wake up at the same time, so it doesn't matter what time I go to bed. I just need more rest to be refreshed to do the things I have to do the next day. So you need rest on a nightly basis, and periodically you just need to get away. And if you don't, there can be dire consequences. In his book, The 24-Hour Society, Martin Moore Eddy says, "The most notorious industrial accidents in recent years, Exxon Valdez, Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and the fatal navigational error of a Korean airliner 007, all occurred in the middle of the night. When a United States ship shot down an Iranian A-300 Airbus, killing all 290 people aboard, fatigue-stressed operators in the high-tech combat information center on the carrier misinterpreted the radar data and repeatedly told the captain that the jet was descending as if to attack, when in fact the airliner remained at a normal flight path. In the Challenger space shuttle disaster, key NASA officials made all ill-fated decisions to go ahead with the launch after working 24 hours straight and getting only 2 to 3 hours of sleep the night before. Their error in judgment cost the lives of 7 astronauts and nearly killed the U.S. space program. In short, we ignore our need for rest and renewal at the peril of others as well as ourselves. We need to take a break. Now, I could spend the same amount of time talking about the fact that we need to have compassion and we need to trust the Lord. But I trust you already know that, so I chose to pound the pulpit on the rest part, which I don't get to talk about very often. But I want to conclude with one more very simple point. What is it going to take to get you to learn these lessons? There are some who simply work too much, they're too busy, and they never learn. What is it going to take? What is it going to take to get you to really get serious about ministering to other people? What is it going to take to get you to teach other people spiritual truth? What is it going to take to get you to just trust the Lord? What is it going to take? A young and successful executive was traveling through a rough neighborhood, going a bit too fast in his new Jaguar. Or is it Jaguar? He was watching for kids darting from between parked cars and slowed down when he thought he saw something. As his car passed a set of parked cars, no children appeared. Instead, a brick smashed into the side of his new car. He slammed on the brakes and backed up to the spot where the brick had been thrown. He jumped out of the car, grabbed the nearest kid, pushed him up against the parked car, shouting, "What was that all about? Who are you? Just what do you think you're doing? That's a new car, and that brick you just threw cost me a lot of money. Why did you do it?" The young boy was apologetic. "Please, mister, please. I'm sorry. I didn't know what else to do. I threw the brick because no one else would stop." With tears streaming down his face and off his chin, he pointed to the spot just around the parked car. "It's my brother," he said. "He rolled off the curb and fell out of his wheelchair, and I can't lift him." Now sobbing, the boy asked the stunned executive, "Would you please help me put him back in the wheelchair? He's hurt and he's too heavy for me." Moved beyond words, the driver tried to swallow the rapidly swelling lump in his throat. He hurriedly lifted up the handicapped boy back into the wheelchair. Then he took out a linen handkerchief and dabbed the fresh scabs and cuts. A quick look told him that everything was going to be okay. "Thank you," he said to the boy who threw the brick, "and may God bless you." Too shaken for words, he simply watched the boy push the wheelchair down the sidewalk toward his home. It was a long, slow walk back to his car. The damage was very noticeable, but the driver never bothered to repair the dent in the door. He kept the dent there to remind him of this message: don't go through life so fast. Somebody has to throw a brick at you to get your attention. Father, thank you for your word that's not near as hard as a brick. Thank you for your gentle Holy Spirit that nudges us and reminds us that we need to trust you, and we need to minister to people, and we need to take a break ourselves. Father, thank you for this gentle reminder that could prevent us from having a lot of hard knocks down the road. In Jesus' name.